For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Chris Massini. My guest today is Christopher Howell, author of 12 collections of poetry, including Love's Last Number, Gaze, and most recently, The Grief of a Happy Life, just released by University of Washington Press. Howell has received numerous awards, including the Washington State Governor's Award, the Washington State Book Award, 2 National Endowment for the Arts Fellowships, and 3 Pushcart Prizes. Locally, he's known as a faculty member in Eastern Washington University's Master of Fine Arts program, as well as director of Willow Springs Books and Lynx House Press. Chris Howell, thanks so much for joining me.
Okay, glad to be here.
So the title of this collection comes from the final line of the final poem in the book.
This is correct.
So if it's not too strange to start at the end, I thought we might start with reading that poem, and then we can talk about this idea of the grief of a happy life.
Sure. You know, the title of the poem is Homecoming. I put on my good black shoes, my shirt of gray softness that reminds me of luck, and the blue hat given me by a child who left this earth that even her shadow made so beautiful. And then, well, I set out down the clamor of roads and almost by accident onto paths through dense apothecaries of evergreen and fern, and finally to meadow and orchard, risen from the dead into a contentment that did not know me and wouldn't take my money or my name. Did I not see I was the same no one who had lived here always and could never return? Did I not perceive the multitudes waving their arms like wind to be known again and gathered like pieces of a god? How many, many years, how much spent blood to unpilgrim ourselves, to stand before an empty house, glistening with the grief of a happy life.
That was Christopher Howell reading his poem Homecoming from his collection, The Grief of a Happy Life. So there is a good amount of both grief and happiness in these poems, and it's obviously an intriguing juxtaposition of emotions. Can you say more about why you thought it made a fitting title for this collection of poems?
Well, I think anyone who experiences deep grief also comes to recognize its connection to happiness, and it's not merely a matter of contrast. In some ways, it is a matter of value, which is to say that grieving for our losses in a certain way enables us to reach the depth of feeling that we had for those persons or those things that we lost. Without that depth of feeling, finally, there's no happiness. There's a sense in which these are either inextricably tied or in some sense also perhaps even the same thing. I think it's a fairly complicated perception to try to talk about in a kind of rational way, because it's not a particularly rational concept. So poetry provides this avenue of realization, let's call it, or actualization, for something that otherwise we have no real language for.
You talk a lot about your own experiences with grief and family members and lost cats and just a wide range of grief. And there's also a lot of recurring themes of childhood. There's several poems that deal with memories of childhood that seem steeped in a longing or something. And I'm curious, what is it about childhood memories that keep you returning to that time? And does that somehow relate to this idea of grief and or happiness?
Actually, I suppose it does. I mean, childhood is one of the first things that you actually have an experience of losing, assuming that you don't experience terrible tragedies. And that feeling of loss, that relationship to what was, changes as you go through time. And so you keep revisiting that. Again, I suppose, in part, because revisiting it does call forth in some ways the grief of having had to say goodbye to it. And also that resonant happiness that you feel by invoking it, by in some respect at all, I suppose, reliving it.
Well, can we read one of the poems that deal with childhood?
Sure. It is based on an experience that was very common in my generation and in the part of the world where I grew up, which is that all of us, from the time we were maybe eight until we were in our middle teens, spent our summer vacations picking the crops. You know, first it was strawberries, and then it was raspberries, and then it would be beans. And if you got really ambitious, it would be hops. And it became a ritual in some ways, I suppose. But it also was the first experience that most of us really had of work and how there can be elements of play in work. Also, there's a sort of theological thing going on underneath this text. Also, the idea of certain kinds of memory being enshrined and becoming a kind of vision of heaven. Before Genesis, we rose at dawn, struggled into our clothes, drifted down to the gravel lot in front of Jesperson's big little store, and stood clutching our lunch sacks and yawning like a gaggle of pink-faced angels waiting for the bus that would bring us out the gates of our pearlescent lives and into the province of a loud-voiced man who would assign us rows by the careful and utter harvesting of which we might redeem him, and ourselves as well, depending. In the beginning, the chill of the dew-heavy leaves was a penance hard to bear, yet we strapped on the little bread-box carriers and plunged our hands in among the stiff canes with their offerings of berries, pendulous, bumping as we troubled the greenery, our movements swift and raggedly precise. At Rose End, of course, we would cross over and go back as we had come. Soft thud of fruit falling into hallocks, chatter and whoop of the birds, Mr. Derschmidt yelling at his enormous wife, "Them rows was all done yesterday, Eunice!" A few large spiders and once in a while a harmless snake, sun, high and hot by 10, the shirts come off, and the second 100 years of the day begins. Lunch approaches with infinitesimal slowness, one island moving toward another, as we labor to be fruitful, to multiply the sum of Earth's blessings, and to earn enough to know what we deserve. The lunch hour passes like the hour before an execution, though the last meal is beautiful. Sprawling in shade by the barn, warm grass beneath us, and an immense blue diamond that goes on and on above. That girl, the serious girl with violet eyes, falls asleep under the great maple. And when Derschmidt starts yelling again that berries don't pick themselves, I am the one who somehow dares to touch her shoulder and say, "He's calling. We've got to go back." Heaven was like that.
That was Christopher Howell reading his poem Before Genesis from his new collection of poetry, The Grief of a Happy Life. He will be hosting a release event and reading along with Seattle poet Linda Beards on Saturday, November 16th, 7 p.m. at Auntie's Bookstore. Chris, thanks so much for joining me.
No, thanks for having me.